Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. I'm your host, Beam Weeks. This is episode number 124. How about that? And with me is Stephen Jeeves, my co-host. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing great. I'm trying to dry off here. I just drove back from Birmingham, and it is raining. Man, is it raining out there. I couldn't see the road. I couldn't see anything. I'm just driving into the darkness, hoping that I'm not going to run into a tree. Thinking, gee, I wonder how they would teach handling this at the Red Mountain Driving Academy. But I'm back home now. I'm a little drippy, but, you know, here we are.
All right.
So what's going on?
So before we get started, I want to do a shout-out to one of our usual regular listeners and participants, Verwayne Greenhall. He had a medical issue and is in the hospital. Now, I got an email from his wife, Lisa, just before showtime. She said he's doing better, but he's not going to be with us tonight. So we're wishing him the best and a speedy recovery, and hopefully he will be in the audience next week for the last live show of the year. So there you go with that.
Yeah, we also got some bad news this week in the indie author community. Indie author Billy Ray Chitwood, we've lost him. And he was a really nice guy. I mean, I first met him 6, 7, 8 years ago, something like that, when we both belonged to a club that turned into a cult, and he was on my tweet support team list. So
yeah.
I used to go out there and help promote him and his books and stuff like that. And he passed away this week. And, you know, I just want to say in the indie author community, we're all a community. We support each other, and sometimes we lose one. You know, we've lost Suzanne Burke, for example, and Catherine Treat. And when that happens, we don't let those people go. Jan Hawk would
Jan
be
Hawk.
Another example. Yeah. We don't let them go. We keep their books alive. We keep promoting them. We keep talking about them. We spread the word, and we try to carry on for them and doing that presence and that promotion that they can no longer do for themselves. And we would like to hope that somebody would do that for us when the time comes as well. So I'm sitting here looking at Amazon. He's got an Arizona Tragedy, a Bailey Crane mystery. So he has a mystery series. He's got Cloud Dancer, Dominique. That looks like part of another series. The Reluctant Savage, Stranger Abduction, Murder in Pueblo Del Mar, Phoenix Fire, Satan's Song, Cracked Mirror. He's got a whole bunch of books. Joe Public's Political Perspective. So if you're not familiar with Billy Ray Chitwood, that's Chitwood, check out his books. You might find something that you like, and that helps spread the word. And, you know, let's see what we can do to remember Billy.
Yeah, I at the old place that you mentioned, the club turned cult, I interviewed him on my old podcast over there. And I remember he was a fun interview, very interesting. And I remember I had asked him if he was related to Joey Chitwood, the old stunt driver from back in the 60s and 70s. He used to have the Joey Chitwood Daredevil show. And I believe he said it was like third or fourth cousin or something like that. But that was kind of neat. So we're gonna miss him. He was a good guy.
Yeah, Billy Ray Chitwood. So the book Shipwrecked and Rescued, Cars and Crew, City of Banger by Larry Jorgensen, historian and journalist, is out now. It's out there everywhere at all the retailers, hardcover, dust jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all the different ebook editions. And the book is, let's see if we can come up with a cliche, selling like hotcakes. So
yeah.
He's out there having some
flying
fun
off
with
the
it.
Shelves.
Flying off the shelves. There you go. He's been doing some little touring, going to events, things like that. He even traveled up to Wisconsin and Michigan from southern Louisiana, where he lives. and did some promoting up there, and he's getting a great response everywhere he goes, and he's getting gift shops and museums and stores and things like that are ordering quantities of books from him and selling those. So that's Shipwrecked and Rescued. It's the true story about back in the 1920s, Walter P. Chrysler himself tried to ship several hundred Chryslers up to Canada on a ship in Lake Superior, and a storm came in. The ship foundered. They wound up having to do a daring rescue of the crew, and that left a foundering ship out there with all those pretty cars on it. So they mounted a rescue of the cars, and it's a cool book. Great story. Lots of historic photos. If you're from the Keweenaw Peninsula, there'll be a lot of stuff up there that you'd recognize. We highly recommend that book, Shipwrecked and Rescued by Larry Jorgensen.
Just a reminder, Mad Max and Sweet Sarah, the audiobook by Ellie Collins, is out now and available, as is Girl Wears Those Shoes by Jenny Wong. And both of those are over there on Amazon. You can get them, and just they're both fantastic audiobooks. I enjoyed working on both of them, so get over there and grab a copy. Now, listeners, if you want to participate tonight, a question or a comment for tonight's guest, you can do so a couple of different ways. Here you can do those.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right. Yeah. So I got this thing that opened up here, so let me try to get rid of this and see if that does anything. There we go.
So we've had a flurry of activity here at Fresh Ink Group. We always have a flurry of activity, and sometimes it's a deluge. Well, it's been a storm lately. We've really been cranking and getting a whole bunch of books ready to be released. Operation Whiteout, a Mac McDowell mission, the fourth book in the Mac McDowell series by Robert G. Willis-Croft. That sucker is going to be published by this weekend, so you start watching for that. The second book in the Sassy series by B.A. Johnson. This one, Sassy Uncovers Peter Allen's Secret. That's looking like it'll be published by this weekend. We've got Daddy Yo-Yo and the Legendary Marvel Tournament, a children's, illustrated children's book. That's probably in the next week or two. We've got American Darkness by Steve Skibicki. That's looking like a couple of weeks. The third book in the Chair series by Robert McKenzie. We're getting down to the wire on that one. How to Pay an American by McGregor. He's the guy we keep putting in the newsletter every couple of weeks, showing him somewhere else in the world playing bagpipes with people. And right now he's in L.A. Where he just did some kind of a strange concert. And then he's taking a plane to Colorado, and he's going to finish the final edit on that book. And, you know, doing his review and stuff like that over the next couple of days, and try to get this thing out by Christmas as well. There's four or five more too. I can't even name them all off the top of my head. But hey, if you're into Fresh Ink Group books, we got a bunch coming.
Got a bunch coming. I am hard at work on the audio book for Robert G. Willis-Croft's Operation Whiteout. In fact, I spent this whole afternoon working on a chapter, and that's done. And that there is, but hopefully that'll be done within a week or so. It might take a little longer. These are long chapters, so it's you know, it's coming along. Now, as Stephen mentioned, sharing the exploits of what's his name again there, the bagpipe guy.
Oh, McGregor.
McGregor, yeah, sharing his exploits in the newsletter. If you're not getting our newsletter, you need to. And here's how you can do that.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
Yeah, so let's take a look at the top five print bestsellers from Fresh Ink Group this week. It's starting to sound like another cliche, a broken record. Because it's the same three books that we've been talking about for a little while now. Every time I look, they keep leapfrogging each other over who's in first, who's in second, who's in third, or whatever. As of 5 minutes ago, in the number one and number four slots, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by Mark Herndon, the drummer from the super group Alabama, which is out there still touring right now. I just got a notice that they're doing a show in Louisiana, offering to buy tickets for it. But the High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by Mark Herndon and the One in Four Slots, Shipwrecked and Rescued, Cars and Crew, which we just talked about, by Larry Jorgensen. That's in the number 2 and 5 slots. Now, keep in mind, both of those have not only the soft cover, but the hard cover in our top 5 bestsellers. And that just delights me to no end. Sometimes we sit around and, you know, toast each other, drink eggnog, and say, wow, that's pretty good. People selling hardcovers, we like seeing that. But at any rate, the book that's the third book that's in this list right now, and right now it's in the number 3 slot. It was in the number 4 slot earlier today. It'll be in the number 2 slot probably later today. Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks, Keeping the Fleet Afloat by retired Naval Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate.
All right. So speaking of the Herndons, Mark Herndon, he is being inducted into the South Carolina Music Hall of Fame. And I believe he's getting the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
This is going to be at the House of Blues in Myrtle Beach, which is where he got his start before joining Alabama. And so we, in celebration of that, December 28th, we are having a rerun of core presentation of his episode that he did, he and his wife Leah Seawright did back some months ago. So tune in for that on December 28th. And if you missed any other episode or you just want to relive a great episode, we have every episode we've ever done is in the archives, and here's where you can find those.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
All right, now before I introduce tonight's guest, Stephen, how is this sounding? Is this cutting out or anything?
I haven't heard you cut out, no.
Okay, because something opened up on my computer a little while ago, and I don't know why it just opened up on its own, but I shut it, so there shouldn't be a problem. All right, so tonight's guest, Kenneth Lindquist, is a driving instructor, amateur sports car racer, teen driving clinic instructor, and the parent designated to teach 3 daughters. He is a member of the Sports Car Club of America and the American Driver and Traffic Safety Education Association, founder of the Red Mountain Driving Academy. Ken lives near Birmingham, Alabama. Welcome to the show, Kenneth.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey Ken, you keeping dry down there? It's certainly raining hard.
Yes, it's hard to stay dry.
So, Kenneth, let's start off with where are you from originally?
Originally from Connecticut. I've lived in 7 states in the District of Columbia. So I may sound like Connecticut. I may sound like Alabama. But I've been all those places.
So why moving around so much?
Well, usually for a job or school or something like that. So it's I've not been chased or had to escape or anything like that.
What was your favorite place to live?
I've been asked that several times, and what I've found is I like something about every place I've lived. And that is, so it's been, I always want to go back to Pennsylvania in the early fall, those clear blue skies. But South Carolina is in the springtime. That's really great. So, there's something about every place I've lived that I really enjoy.
Diplomatic answer.
Yeah. And now you're settled in Birmingham long term. That's where your business is as well.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yes, I've been here about 30 years now.
Oh, so it's stuck.
Yeah.
So what kind of kid were you? I mean, were you into reading and writing from an early age? You ever find yourself like sitting in a tree reading anything?
Well, yes, exactly. Reading, sitting in a tree, reading the Tarzan books by it's a classic author.
Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Burroughs. Yeah, like sixth grade, that something like that. And when I was old enough to go to the library on my own.
So what's this about you drove a truck at age six?
I wasn't supposed to do that, but I had seen my father driving a truck that he had borrowed, and I thought, well, that'd be, you know, what I'll do is I'll help him out. I'll move the truck a little closer to the house so that when he comes out after lunch, he'll be able to be closer to it. So I got in the truck, I put the clutch in, I put it in gear, and let it roll. And then I put the clutch in, took it out of gear. About the time my father came running out of the house, full steam.
I have a similar to that.
I didn't know how to use the brake.
Yeah.
But no mishap, huh?
No.
Oh, cool. Kind of ironic. That out of control kid out there lollygagging and hot riding in a truck is the one who founded a driving academy someday.
He's the one teaching kids to drive now.
Yeah.
Well, my father knew better than to let me off too much by myself. He bought an old car and put it in the yard, and I would start at the back of the yard and rev the engine and pop the clutch and tearing down the driveway in a big cloud of dust. He knew I needed to get rid of that early.
Yeah.
Oh, I also learned not to do that cloud of dust thing on wash day.
Yeah. That makes sense. So, Beam, you want to roll our first commercial?
Sure thing.
Now, from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Willis-Croft, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. With a security clearance above top secret, Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge Mac McDowell leads his team into critical Cold War counter-Soviet missions. Watch Mac prove what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. In Operation Ivy Bells, it's the summer of 1972 when Mac and his off-the-books deepwater espionage group are conducting a daring undersea wiretapping operation to gather Russian intel and avert world war. Join nuclear submariner Mac McDowell for extreme diving, a battle with giant squid, and more as he risks everything in the most dangerous operation yet. In Operation Icebreaker, Mac McDowell is leading his submarine team for a mission to lay Sosus arrays under the Arctic ice when they clash with a highly automated Alpha-class Soviet submarine. Overwhelmed by mechanical problems, the Soviet crew abandons their sub near Point Barrow, Alaska. The skipper launches DSRV-1 Mystic so Mac and his crew can board the empty sub and gather intelligence. The arrival of an even more advanced Soviet sub leads to breathtaking underwater clashes with the specter of war looming. Will Mac and his crew be sunk by the Soviets, or will they safely return to Alaska, where Mac's new love, Kate, anxiously waits? In Operation Arctic Sting, Mac McDowell and his team capture the abandoned Soviet sub. Piloting their prize through the ice pack to the U.S. East Coast, they must evade or confront other Soviet subs trying to recover the ship or sink it. Breathtaking deep-sea clashes erupt, including hand-to-hand combat with Soviet Morskoy Spetsnaz divers under the ice. Too far from Tuthis to escape, the Americans are accosted by a 5-ton orca. Will Mac's ship survive long enough to reach friendly waters, or will the men become just another meal for a deadly whale? The McDowell Mission Series by Robert G. Willis-Croft is available worldwide in jacketed hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks from Kindle to Nook and Kobo and more, plus exclusive audiobook editions with music and sound effect. The Mac McDowell Mission Series is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Take a breath and dive in for thrilling submarine adventures in every Mac McDowell mission.
And book 4 should be out by next week's show, probably this weekend. Subscribe to that newsletter if you want to be informed the second it's available.
And speaking of Robert G. Willis-Croft, he's on Twitter. He says, I'm here, under the weather, but here. Well, good to have you in the audience, Robert.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Kenneth, education. What kind of education do you have moving through your life?
Well, I started off with an undergraduate degree in psychology from Catholic University in Washington, D.C. And, of course, the only thing that trained you for is for going for a master's. That was not the path that I wanted to take. I joined the Navy after that. And eventually I got around to getting an MBA from George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. That was a little more useful.
A little bit, yeah. Although you might be surprised how many ways you use the psychology. A lot of people who have psychology degrees, I have a bachelor's degree in psychology, I'm finding that you know, in marketing and things like that, you're always thinking about the mindset of the audiences that you're trying to reach. And likewise, when you're writing stories, you know, you're looking at the psychology of the characters and stuff. So it's usually not the kind of degree that you, you know, you go apply and you fill out psychologist, although sometimes it is, but lots of ways to use them in lots of ways. Kenneth, tell us about your family. What you know, we mentioned three daughters and that you're in charge of teaching them to drive. How did that go?
Well, that all started before I had really gotten into the driving at a highly technical level. But so I am was in the same position that many parents are today and many instructors are today, you know, getting in the car and then what do we do next? So with my oldest daughter, we started off in a subdivision that didn't go through, you know, just they had the roads paved and that was it. So that was good practice, basically. Not a parking lot, but close to it. We started in Georgia training her, and she, yeah, I guess you'd have to say, is not a natural. And so that at 15, you start in Georgia, but we moved to New Jersey, and you can't start till 16 there. So she had 2 years of driving as a rookie before she had went to the lesson or to get to her license, and we were a little not sure she was going to be able to do that, going to that pass at that point.
So your wife's not involved in any of this driver's training stuff. It all fell to you, huh?
Then when we moved to New Jersey, though, I had had this experience getting on the interstate where I was on a on-ramp. I had the concrete to the right, traffic to the left, traffic behind me, and the truck in front of me dropped an alternator off the back of it.
Ooh.
And it started bouncing around at about 40 or 50 miles an hour. Mm. And now, I came through that all right. The alternator took a bounce to the left, hit the hubcap of traffic, bounced under my front bumper, and I don't know what happened to it after that. But I had learned to do some, you know, sideways, you know, slides and that kind of thing on dirt roads and snowy roads in Connecticut. But this was on pavement. So I thought I would need a little bit of extra training. And I did find what was called advanced driver training. And I took that course. And that helped me out quite a bit. And it started me down the path of competition and then training other people.
Yeah, Yeah, which leads us to your day job. How did Red Mountain Driving Academy come about?
Well, after doing some amateur racing for a while, I was on the board of the sports car club local version. And we adopted a teenage driving clinic program. And since I was the one that brought it up to the board, they made me teach it. And so my daughters got the benefit from that. And sorry, I'm having I've got a cold or something like that going on.
Right. Well, sorry, we can roll a commercial now. If you want to get a drink of water or something? Let's do that. We're due for a commercial anyway, Beam.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Now, from popular Christian romance author Jeannie Sharp, A Chance to Choose. The life of a baker had been his dream since college, but a deep void surfaces every morning when Ben looks at himself in the mirror. Why at 29 has he not been able to find the woman of his dreams? His boss and owner of Camden Bake Shop, Chloe, keeps pestering him about dating. Then, an old fling mails him a plane ticket to London. Except turmoil draws him back home to Virginia. Does Ben get the chance to go to London? With three women suddenly interested, will Ben ever be able to choose? A Chance to Choose is book three of the Second Chances series by Christian romance and children's book author Jeannie Sharp. A Chance to Choose is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, paperback, and all ebook formats from Kindle to Kobo to Nook and Google Play. A Chance to Choose is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Grab your copy of A Chance to Choose today.
That one is the second book in her series, so we highly recommend that. Get out and check it out if you're interested in Christian romances. Jeannie's a good writer. She tells a good story. She's got fun characters. That one's called A Chance to Choose by Jeannie Sharp. How's your voice doing there, Kenneth?
I hope it's doing a little bit better.
All right. So I like that notion of, hey, great idea, Ken. Let us know how it works out. So you wound up teaching the first one, and how did it work out?
Yeah, it worked out. The training for the teenagers was really good. It was aimed at the teenager that just got their permit and maybe had a couple of lessons. And so it took them through some of the exercises that would keep them from getting in trouble later, like emergency braking. So I taught that clinic for about 8 years. And then I decided to make it a business.
There you go.
And so I started the business. Using a lot of the information I gained from teaching that teenage clinic.
Yeah. All right, so say if somebody wants to be a student at Red Mountain Driving Academy, what does that involve? Is it all classroom? Do you actually do road stuff? Do you have simulators?
All I teach is the behind-the-wheel portion. I don't teach the classroom. I don't have those kinds of classroom types of skills or training or background, but I do have the behind-the-wheel portion. And I'm able to incorporate a lot of the classroom concepts and, how to do it sort of things that is included in the textbooks.
Yeah. So is this like it was back in the day when I was taking driver's ed through school? You go out in the car and you've got like three students in the car and each one drives for a little bit and you go through exercises and try things? Or is it more individualized? How do you do it?
Well, I start off where, depending on where the student lives, I start off training near them on roads that they are going to use. Well, of course, we start in the parking lot to make sure the skills are good before you go out on the road. There's, I like the idea of training before they actually get out and do something in traffic. I think it's a good way to teach a child or even an adult that rather than go over their head to start something new, that they practice the skills that they're going to need in what they're planning on learning. So we start off. Go ahead.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it like a series of lessons or something, or you just go out and kind of wing it?
Oh, no. We start off in the parking lot with, the cars do three things. They go, stop, and turn. We make sure that they can do all that properly, properly seated. Mm. And able to learn as they go and get the physical parts of the driving started. And there's a series of lessons. It's a curriculum rather than a rubric. By that I mean it's detailed and not just a generic, something like generic would be make sure the student is seated properly. Well, what I say is the eyes should be at this level, the hands should be at this level, the feet should be like this, that sort of thing. Really good details. And so we go through about six lessons, six different levels of training, starting with a parking lot, then going to neighborhood roads, two-lane road, four-lane road, interstates, and developing as they go along that way, because that's the way the skills need to be developed. You want to build the speed and the skills in a logical way. So those specific lessons in the text are what I have found and used for 15 years. To make sure that I have a competent rookie who goes for the license. So that's what I've put in the text for instructors is the details of that. Now, the instructors may have a regular classroom series that they go through, but the training behind the wheel is still done primarily by mentoring. So people go out in the car and have situations come up, and then they try to solve them. And just like you were when you were in high school, three people in the car go out and have a situation develop and somebody tell them how it's solved. So that is pretty inefficient. Well, what I've done is break down all the errors that can occur in steering and controlling the car and put that into the textbook so that the instructor doesn't have to wait for a particular error to occur to find out what the solution is. They got the description of the problem, the solution right there, and it's available for reference. So that's what I have done, I think, is shorten up mentoring as making it a lot quicker for a new instructor, competent. I had one daughter go out with an instructor that I thought was, I didn't like the story that I heard. The instructor put three kids in the car that he didn't know how to, he had never met. They went to McDonald's, got him a cup of coffee. He put the oldie station on the radio, and they jumped on the interstate.
Whoa.
Yeah, it
doesn't sound professional. One of the girls had never driven before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
That's not fair to her at all.
No. And it's dangerous. It's Dickens.
Yeah,
so,
it's a lot, yeah.
You know, the instructors need, need them to go through some kind of a process of knowing what their student's going to do. And that's included in the text that I've prepared.
All right. I'm going to throw in here a tweet from Robert G. Willis-Croft. Kind of ties into the alternator story you were telling a little while ago. He says, we were driving on the Autobahn in Germany in a loaded VW bus when we lost the front right tire. Seems like the worst flat tire we ever had. I can imagine.
Probably going fairly fast on the Autobahn, too.
Yeah.
Well, I had a wheel come off in a race.
Oh.
Yeah, that was exciting.
Well, what was the race?
I was at the Memphis race course, and I had one lap to go to be able to count my race as a completed race for training purposes. And I had a sudden vibration in the front of the car. So I made that one last lap. I passed the start-finish line and got to turn one. Turned the wheel, and the car went straight, right off the road, into the grass. What had happened was the wheel bolt had snapped, and the other bolts had wobbled out during the course of the other lap. So it was quite an advance at the time, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a challenge and a danger, not just for you, but for the drivers around you as well. Yeah, I've never seen a wheel come off when I was out driving, but the bugaboo that always worries me is like when you're near an 18 wheeler and one of those tires explodes, and all the rubber comes off the tire, like right at your windshield or right in front of your car. It's like, man.
I've seen that. I haven't been that close to him, but been behind him and saw the wheel come or tire coming apart on the truck. This is years ago. I just stay back.
I've had to do some serious swerving in order to keep from hitting some of them as they were flying at me. That's scary stuff. But yeah, what you're describing, Kenneth, is a good sound educational model. If you make them aware. You know, you give them the information and help them develop the skill. You give them the opportunity to practice, and then you help them develop it as a habit. And after that, then they don't have to think about it so much. It's just the way they do things. It's the way they drive. It's what they watch for. It's how they deal with situations. And that's better for keeping everybody safe. I like that. Now, when I was in high school, they actually had simulators that we went to. And I mean, this is 1975. 74, 75, and they actually had computerized simulators with screens, and you'd sit there in a little console with the steering wheel and the pedals and all that kind of stuff, and then the computers would score you. And I love those things because those were designed to put every kind of situation you might ever see on the screen in front of you, and then it was scoring you on how quickly you reacted and what your reactions were as well. And we always had a friendly competition with the other students in the class to see who could get the highest score. And what I really liked about it was the last 10 points out of the 100 points that you could score was not necessarily straight up safety driving skills, but courtesy driving skills. Like you see way down the road, that car pulls up from the right like it wants to turn out and you're on a two-lane or a four-lane road. Change lanes. Give that person the room in time so that person sees that lane is open. And I'll tell you, that's good practice, because here in Alabama, that person's coming out one way or another. The only difference is you don't know which lane that person's going into. If you go ahead and get over and signal, I'm giving you this lane, you got a better shot at knowing where that person's going to go. I call those Alabama turns. The other one being that, you know, like if you got a four-lane divided highway and they're going to turn left, like on a green right, they always turn into the far lane. Even when people are trying to turn into it from the other side, I don't quite get that. But, yeah, back in my day, driver's ed was something that every high school offered, and that was where you got it. We didn't hear of private driving academies and stuff.
Yeah.
The hard thing now, Kenneth, is this something where everybody has to go private or only some schools teach it? So what can high schoolers expect?
According to Department of Transportation, the parents are being put into position of doing more training now, and that's why there are more schools available, probably because of that. The public schools themselves, it's pretty expensive. Now, with the when you're talking about the simulators, I've seen the. I saw one a year and a half ago. It's really good. For instance, they were showing when you go buy some parked car, it was showing feet underneath the car coming around the front before you got there. So you could, it was really that detailed. But it's two-dimensional. It's not three-dimensional. And not everybody can make that transition from two to three. Successfully. There's
now,
the coloring and the shading and the lighting and things like that it's difficult to match that.
Yeah. Now, touching on what Stephen was just saying, okay, I took driver's ed in a private school back in the early 80s. And my situation was the springtime class at school, they offered it at school and they had the simulators at school. But the springtime class was already filled up by the time I was ready to get in there. And fall class, I could wait for the fall and do it in the fall, but my dad said, well, take it during the summer, I'll pay for it. So that's what we did, and we went to a driving school in Lansing, and that's how I got my license. But, you know, I could have waited till the fall and just done it at school, but my dad thought it'd be better to have my driver's license, you know, by the start of the school year rather than, you know, part of the way into it.
Right, learning, getting your license while it's snowing is probably not a good idea.
Yeah, and Robert Willicroft wanted to stress it was the entire wheel that came off.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's flying sparks.
Fun times, eh, Robert?
Yeah. Now, you know, we're talking about the good old days. Back then when we used to do that, I mean, it was basically a three-way curriculum, and it lasted so many weeks. Is your program at Red Mountain, is it like a set number of weeks, set number of sessions, or is it flexible based on the students? I mean, how do you work that?
It depends on the student. A lot of students can complete the course in six lessons. Some take longer. Exceptionally longer. I had, for instance, some Pakistani women take lessons. Now, they never grew up with a toy that was like a car, you know, and they never expected to drive. I mean, the whole thing was very unreal to them. So, you know, 15 lessons to try to get them to the point where they'd be safe. because they did not expect that, did not have training that helped. But that's, you know, talking about individual training. You have to be able to steer correctly. You have to be able to handle the speeds. People who have not driven a go-kart or golf cart, it takes them a while, or a bicycle, to get the idea that the steering is different at different speeds, things like that, and the positioning of the vehicle. So it's it depends on what the – it doesn't make sense to just give six lessons and then walk away. As it just you really want a student who can be a competent driver beside you on the road.
I like that, performance-based training. So the student's ready when the student's ready and not a minute before, which is the way it really ought to be, especially for something important like driving.
Yeah,
that's why. Yeah. That's what I feel.
And something you said, you know, Kenneth, that they become a competent driver on the highway beside you, because it's not just about that person and their safety. It's everybody around them on the highway as well. You want everybody to be safe.
Since we're reminiscing about the old days, I don't know if things are like this now or not, but back in the day, you didn't have to take driver's ed to get a driver's license. You just had to go down and pass the test, pass the written test, pass the road test, and then you had your license. But everybody took driver's ed because the big incentive was big break on the insurance, the car insurance. If you had that driver's ed certificate, and, you know, especially the teenage boys, you know, where right off the bat you just add two zeros to whatever the quote is going to be for the car insurance because he's a teenage boy. And having that certificate knocked that insurance cost way down. So a lot of people who were not that interested in driver's ed got very motivated when it came time to see what the difference in cost was going to be. Is that how things work now? I mean, you don't have to take training to get a license, right?
No.
As far
it
as
isn't necessary, but it is the booklet that you learn from does not cover the actual physical handling of the car. It has the positioning of the car in traffic, but it doesn't tell you how to get to it.
Yeah, and it also doesn't give you all of those real-life situations and examples that you see all the time. You know, some people don't pay attention to them. Some do, you know, but until you see them, until you experience them, you don't know how you will react.
That's right.
Yeah, you don't have to take lessons up here in Michigan either. You just go down to the, you know, I think you'd have to take a road test, but that's it.
Isn't there a specific number of hours that you have to complete, though?
I don't know about now. I have one of my nephews had gotten his license or was looking into it, and it was basically there was a written test at the Secretary of State's office, the DMV, and he had to go out with a instructor and do various things on the road to prove that he was competent. And then he had a 60-day permit, I think. But I may be misspeaking because I didn't talk to him a whole lot about it, but just a little bit.
States require something like 50 hours behind the wheel before you can.
Yeah, I think that might be for with the 60-day permit, 60-day or 90-day permit. He had to have so many hours in, maybe something like that. I'm not sure. I would have to ask him.
So how do you count that? I mean, is that like a parent attests to, this child did this so many hours or whatever?
That's what I'm thinking it would be. That the parent would sign off on it that, he drove for this amount of hours and something along that line. Well, like I said, I'll have to ask him about that. I have to get in touch with him and find out what that was all about.
The difficulty is sometimes it's the same thing repeated. Home to school, school to home to church, church to home to grocery, grocery to home. You really need to be on different kinds of roads, different kinds of signs, because they've been ignoring signs all their life until they go for a license. They need to be looking for those signs when they're started. So those are the kinds of things that I have put in the text for instructors to use to bring up with the students and to plan the trips. on roads that the student may take that would include a roundabout or construction or something like that, that situations that they have to work through.
Well, Pete, you want to roll another commercial? And when we come back, I'd like to hear what Kenneth has for some crazy stories going out there with students.
All right.
Hi, I'm Mary Margaret Fanson. My grandmother, Big Mama, calls me Sassy. I've been a member of the African Methodist Episcopal Church all my life. I never knew why everyone was so proud to be AME. Then I met Gerald in Children's Church. He thinks he knows everything about being AME. I have to learn a lot more just to show him. B.A. Johnson has been writing a series of books about me, my brother, and my friends, with lots of colorful drawings. We also explore bullying, friendship, inclusion, death, grief, forgiveness, and more. Sassy Discovers the AME Church is about me learning about our church and something terrible that happened in Charleston. The second book, Sassy Uncovers Peter Allen's Secret, is about discovering the story of our church's founder's family and one hero in particular. These and more Sassy books are published by Fresh Ink Group in laminated hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats available worldwide. Come on, join me and discover why I can say I'm proud to be AME.
Now, that second book is not out yet. Give us a couple more days, as much as a week, and the second one will be out there. But that first book's been out for about a little over a year now. It's been doing very well. It's been in our top five print bestsellers a number of times as well. And B.A. Johnson is out there doing events involving churches and other groups and things like that, and she's getting a wonderful reception for this book. So she found a very nice niche, created some great characters, and she's got a nice series of books. So pick up that first copy now, and the second book, look for it to be out in the next week or so.
Yeah.
So, Kenneth, have you thought of any examples of going out with students and, you know, where they made your jaw drop, or, you know, take a deep breath and remind yourself everything will be okay?
Well, I do get frightened every now and then, but most of the unusual things that happen are not funny. But I did have one student that tried to turn the vehicle using body English. Go to a left turn, and he'd lean up against the door, turn. And it was complicated by the fact that he had a little problem with left and right. Surprising that you do run into that more frequently than you would expect. When we train children, you know, when they're growing up, we teach them left and right at the same time. The fact that they can keep it straight, that most of them can keep it straight, is amazing. And you teach to do that with a foreign language as well. You teach left and right at the same time as you teach up and down. And so, but what I told him was to look at the controls for changing the outside mirrors, because there's an L and an R in the correct relational positions, so he could always review his left and right every time he got in the car. So that helped a little bit, but he still did lean in the direction he wanted to turn. So I always gave me a clue what he was going to do, no matter what I told him to do. I had two guys that made really wide sweeping turns on their right hand turns. They start the turn late, they do a big sweep to the right and then a big sweep to the left to get it straight again, including scraping the tire and putting a big slash in it on the curb, one of them. And it took me a while to figure out what was going on with them, but what they had in common was they rode a bus. And their idea of a good driver was the bus driver who took up two lanes for every turn. So I had them look out the window at the way the people are driving cars. And also the cue that I use for a right-hand turn is when the curb or the corner disappears from the right-hand corner of the windshield. That's when you start your turn. So because I've had the time to develop those kinds of cues, I can put that in the book, and I can save the time for an instructor who has that ends up with that same kind of a problem. There's a breakdown of the what it takes to make a turn, and looking in the right place is part of it.
Now,
so that,
have
was,
you ever,
that was very instructive for me.
Have you ever had a student that kind of surprised you at how good they were right off the bat? Because, like, when I was a kid, before I got my license, before I got a permit, I drove a lot because my dad would take me out on the back roads and let me drive just to, you know, to get the feel of it. Have you had those kind of students?
Yes. And some of the time, the fundamentals aren't really correct, but the experience with driving, and if you have a person who's sort of athletically inclined. I mean, I don't get athletes because they can do by imitation because of they do all the training that they do physically. But I had one young man who had never driven before, and he was totally competent in 6 lessons. He knew 3 languages. He's in his 20s, and just fantastic. Easily picked up the proper motions, and made it his own, and made it a habit instantly.
I had
the opposite now. I've had to stop giving lessons to some people. I had one lady who was taking lessons during her lunch hour, and she insisted on driving in heels. But, of course, you don't want to let those heels rest on the floor, do you? No, because they'll break off. So she was not having her foot anchored on the floor. And so every bit of acceleration was foot to the floor kind of thing, all the same with the braking. And it was just... I had to stop giving her lessons because she was too unpredictable to be out in traffic.
Wow. Huh.
What about young people? Do you find sometimes you get a student that you just know this person has spent way too many hours playing video games and not being part of the real world? Because video games, all your cues are right there on the screen in front of you. Driving, your cues are all around you. And they're audio, they're visual, they're, you know, tactile even sometimes, feeling the road, stuff like that. Do you notice that that's happening more with the young generation?
But it is usually expressed by the fact that they're 18 by the time they want their lessons. But I have had some with different kinds of... different abilities, put down the game and get in the car and go for driving. And it makes you wonder. Keep your foot on hovering over that extra brake. You may need to use it right now.
Yeah, I picture one swerving to hit everything that's in the road, yelling, 10 points!
10 points.
Sure, it's happened
out
there.
We have one more comment here from Robert Williscroft. He's a talkative one tonight. He says, how about this? Even though most people don't know it, nearly everyone is an expert at vector algebra, weaving around traffic on the road.
Yeah.
Yes, I think so. Anyway. Yes.
Yeah, there's so much of that stuff.
you know, that, having them ride with you so that you can just point out things. I just can't imagine a better way to learn them. I've got so many of the things that just drive me nuts. One of the things that I see here, for example, here in Alabama a lot that I don't see in the north when I go up and drive around up there is this tendency to, like, someone's going to pull out into the road that you're in. The person will pull up there and stop and wait for traffic. But right before traffic gets there, that person will nudge up 5 or 6 feet and then stop again. And when that person does that, I don't know if you're coming out right in front of me or if you're just nudging up 5 or 6 feet and doing what I call the Alabama nudge. That's the kind of stuff where, you know, if you're out driving with students, you can point that kind of stuff out and say, look, if you're doing that, other people have to assume that you might be pulling out in front of them. You know, don't do
well,
that.
That's what the instructor needs to do when they are doing the driving, either to or from a location, is to point out why they're making a lane change, why they're changing their speed, why they're doing signaling at this point rather than at a different point. And, you know, kind of like cartoon bubbles, thought bubbles, to give the student to let them know that you actually have to think while you're driving. What do you know?
I like that, yeah. So before we talk about your books, let's learn a little bit more about you, your hobbies and interests. How do you spend your time when you're not out there thinking about driving or teaching people to drive?
Well, around taking care of the house. And I have a couple of little gardens. I have a friend that lets me go sit in the woods and pretend I'm hunting squirrels from time to time. I like to go to some of the indoor ranges and practice some shooting, that kind of thing. I do follow Formula One racing more than others, but that's my outdoor activities, gardening, taking a gun and going somewhere.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, when we talked earlier, you mentioned autocross. What exactly is that?
Autocross is something for the sports car club. You go to get a big parking lot and you lay out a race course with cones. And the object of it is to go around the course as fast as you can and have the lowest time. So the course may be 30 to 45 seconds long, and it's very intense, and you get your time to the hundredth and the thousandth of a second and try to beat everybody else doing it that's in your class. The classes are based on horsepower to weight ratio primarily. So the last time I took a car out, when I get a new car, I take it out to the autocross and see which end comes around first. It comes to that. And I was up against two drivers in Camaros that were, Camaro GT, two Mustang GTs, and one other car. And I did not come in last, even though I only go out on autocross every few years. I was still able to get around and clear the course pretty fast.
Yeah, that sounds like bragging. I did not come in last. I'm picturing a bunch of driving instructors out on the town partying and, things get a little bit crazy. And next thing you know, somebody pops the trunk and out comes the traffic cones. Now it's going to get wild.
It's a big thing. Yeah, some people develop a car just for that. There were a couple of guys that had what they call this. It was a Sprinto. It was a Pinto with a Sprite engine. No, it was a Sprite with a Pinto engine, something like that.
Wow.
Sprinto.
Great. So, Steve, let's roll one more commercial here, and then let's talk to Kenneth about these books.
All right.
Think of your brain as a place to learn, like school. Turns out, the hippocampus is really one part of your brain that helps you make and save memories. The Hippocampus, the interactive brain book, fun learning for science lovers, uses hippos to teach young readers all about different parts of the human brain. From keeping the heart beating and blood flowing to breathing and dreaming, your brain does many things for you, even when you don't think about it. This includes sneezing, sleeping, running, playing, and even digesting that meal you ate for lunch. But think about this. Without your brain, you couldn't smile or laugh or wink or read. The hippocampus helps you decide what's happening and what to remember right now. The Hippocampus by Helen Burrell, Ph.D., offers young thinkers and readers of all ages an easy way to learn all about that gray matter that matters most. Available in hardcover, softcover, and ebook editions, the Hippocampus helps us learn about our place to remember. The Hippocampus is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
All right. So we're talking to founder of Red Mountain Driving Academy, Kenneth Lindquist. He's also the author of two books. One of them is out right now. The other one should be coming out in the coming days, probably by this weekend. Kenneth, what did the pandemic have to do with getting these books started?
Well, I wasn't able to take any students out because of the being in the car together. So that's when I decided to write the manual, basically a manual for instructors and for parents. It was, I had the time and the inclination. I can't teach everybody in Birmingham, though I'd like to. And so I need to spread the influence around on the proper way to bring students along to develop their skills in a proper sequence. And so that's why I wrote the two books.
And the books themselves are designed for actually being used like in a mentoring style of teaching. Is that right?
Yes. To be really good at something, you need some talent, you need training, and you need some practice. And so what my books are intended to do is to give you the benefit of the practice and the training that I've been through so that the competence of training a new driver can come through. If you've been driving for 20 years, you don't really think about how to make a tight turn. If you, like you're talking about the car that comes up, going to enter an intersection, and it creeps up closer to the edge. Now, if you were in that car and you were to make a right turn, you would just do that and you would stay in your lane. But a beginning student would not know that what the way to do that is to steer first and then give the gas. So that's the kind of thing that you need to break down how you do things. And after 20 years of just automatically doing it, it's really hard to get your mind on that.
Yeah, I think, that comes with, 20 years, 30 years. It almost becomes, second nature, part of the person that whole driving. The way, if you worked at a job for 20 years on a production line or something, you know what you're doing. Yet when you run into somebody who's new at it, I mean, there's some scary situations there, especially with, somebody behind the wheel. Like Stephen had mentioned earlier, somebody creeping up, are they coming out there or are they just creeping up? You don't know what their mindset is.
Well, the other scary thing, for instance, would be like a four-lane road with a turn lane in the middle, and so the car comes out and jumps into the turn lane, and you're not sure if they're coming over or not. So, but if you think about it, what you do is you look at the front wheel. That tells you what that car is going to do before the rest of it moves. So if you use that as a cue, you may be mentally ready to put the brake on, but you don't go slamming the brake on every time someone comes out in the middle of the road there. So there are cues and clues like that. You can use shadows to see how close cars ahead of you are. So if the two cars ahead of you are very close, you probably want to leave a little extra room in case they happen to have a meeting.
Yeah. The big obvious cue that we're always watching for is what's the driver's face head doing. I mean, is the person looking at you, looking your direction, seeing your car coming, or is that person looking the other direction, or is the
or
person
looking
down at a phone?
Yeah, at the phone.
Which is
way
too common now. You know, I mentioned like the simulators, trained me to always be courteous and in way in advance, move over so that people can see I'm giving them a lane if they want to go ahead and come out and join traffic instead of having to sit there and wait till everybody who's clogging the right lane gets out of their way. And 9 times out of 10, that person will still sit there anyway, utterly unaware that I have done that so that the person can come out. And then by the time I drive by, the person's not even looking down at a phone or doing something else. And it's like, it's like, man, you shouldn't be. Even if you think that you've got nothing to do except sit there and wait for traffic, you should still be watching it. Because you don't know what's coming at you. You don't know what's going to happen. Always be ready for every possible thing. And there's just no time to sit there and be messing with your phone. That just drives me nuts. And the one that you described about coming out where there's four lanes and there's one in the middle, that's precisely the reason that I had to go do follow-up with my surgeon this afternoon. I had 12 fractures in my hands a year ago last week. Everybody was turning right on red into the right lane. I was in the left lane. And the next person who came out right as I was entering the intersection wasn't turning right into the right lane on a red, as required by law, but was shooting all the way across to that middle lane for a left turn. Problem is, I was going through the intersection at 45 miles an hour when he did it, and I never even had time to touch the brake. And it's just a bad situation.
Yeah.
And it hurts every time I think about it.
Yeah.
Okay, now the names of the books are How to Teach Driving, Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson. Both books are named that, How to Teach Driving, Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, but then one is subtitled Parents Edition, and one's subtitled Instructor's Edition. Now, the Instructor's Edition, is there like a national standard that people are being trained for? Is this something that varies state by state? Is this something that's required? Do these people need to be certified? What is the importance of this book out there in the driving education community?
The important part of that is, or the most important part, is the description of the errors that are made and how to solve them. And that is the same in both books, but the version has an exercise that I use as a kind of a graduation exercise for most of my students, and that is an emergency lane change. The ordinary person who is not into cars and has not taken extra courses either for instruction or in driving, they're going to find that exercise a little too complicated. So I have not included that in the parents section, but in the parents edition, I have listed where they can find additional aids for driving instruction, where you can find the extra brake for the passenger side, spinner knobs if you need them. There are some not J.C. Whitney, but real significant other kinds of equipment like that that can be used to training. So how to look it up, how to find it. So it is in both of those cases, the real important part is the analysis of the errors and the corrections.
Yeah. And today's newsletter has some examples of that, pages from one of the books. So if your listeners, if you're interested in that, check that newsletter out. You'll see some examples down at the bottom. And then, of course, you're going to want to go buy the book, either for yourself or for someone that you care about. But, you know, you mentioned equipment. Like, for example, if you want to set up some practice exercises, having traffic cones would be convenient. Most people don't have them. I mean, do they need to go out and get traffic cones, or can you use waste baskets or other things well and just kind of wing it?
Well, you can use, you know, if you've got more than one student, you're going to have to train. If you're a parent or if you're an instructor, you probably can use the cones. But you could also use cardboard boxes. You could use milk cartons. You want them, you know, put a little water in the milk cartons or sand in the boxes, that sort of thing. For the kinds of exercises, the beginning exercises that are in both of the text for a beginning driver. So there are, it doesn't have to be an expensive approach. You can make do.
So just about anything would work except maybe young children. You know. Today's breaking exercise, send your little brother out there. Tell him where to stand. Let's go.
Yeah, stand over there.
Well, actually, I during the clinics, I was the one that was standing out in front of the cars for part of the time. So that was, yeah. You want to make sure you trained them well at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, going back, Stephen, you had asked about, is there, you know, a national consensus on these things? And, you know, the fact that it varies from state to state. I see we got a comment here on Twitter from Jill Mayer, and she's talking about in Colorado what some of the stipulations are. She says in Colorado, 15-year-old students are required to take a driver's ed class plus a written test to get a learner's permit. 16-year-olds have to pass the written test. To get a minor's driver's license, that's below 21 years old, the student must show they've logged 50 hours of supervised driving. So that's Colorado.
That's a lot more stringent than it was back in my day, that's for sure.
Yeah. Times have changed.
So is it kind of like a national standard for instructors? I mean, are there certain credentials or certificates or anything?
No. Different states handle it differently. In Alabama, for instance, there is no standard for driving instructor anymore. There was up until 2015, but that's been eliminated. In New Jersey, for instance, driving instructors are taught by the state police, and then they have a 3-year period of mentoring before they can be fully recognized as an instructor. In New York, it's also taught by the state police, the instructors, and they have a requirement of teaching for 2,000 hours before they could go off on their own.
That's a big requirement.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, both those places, you know, they're used to apprenticeships, and that kind of an area.
So then the book, How to Teach Driving, Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, Instructor's Edition, is not geared specifically toward passing a certain test or getting a certain certificate, but basically just a broad overview of all of the skills a good driving instructor should have, and then, you know, apply those to whatever the requirements are in an individual.
Well, the driving rules only vary slightly from state to state, so you still need to be able to read the signs and do what they say. That kind of thing. There's not that much difference in the standards of driving from state to state. Some peculiarities. Alabama, for instance, does not have a speed limit on a merge. Other states have speed limits, but they're 10 or 15 miles an hour, which is what people normally do. I don't know how you would enforce a 15-mile-an-hour merge speed limit on something that's only about 2 or 3 car lengths long. So, I mean, it doesn't make sense to have a speed limit. You can have a recommended speed, but the speed limit, it's the merge is kind of silly. But most of the states, you can drive in Colorado, with an Alabama license. You know what to do.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the books are How to Teach Driving, Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson. There's a Instructor's Edition, which is out now, both in laminate hardcover and softcover, as well as ebook editions. And the Parents Edition, geared specifically toward parents, and we've got some extra cool pictures and such in there. This I know because we went through hundreds of pictures to get the ones that had the precise positions of the hands on the wheels and the precise height of the steering wheel and all that. So Mr. Lindquist here is definitely a stickler for the details, and we made sure we got all those details right in the books. Those books are a tremendous aid, no matter how much experience you have. If you're in a position of trying to teach somebody how to be a good, safe, responsible driver, these books are the best place to start by far. And here's our little pitch here. They're published by Fresh Ink Group. So get on over to freshinkgroup.com and check them out. You can't find them other places. And embrace them. Make use of it, because this is important stuff. You could be saving a life just by having a little bit of extra effort helping a young person be a good driver.
Yeah, indeed.
So, Kenneth, what kind of advice do you have for people out there who are helping others learn how to drive?
Well, you have to have an attitude of understanding that the student wants to be a good driver already. And they are going to make mistakes. So what you have to do is try to anticipate the mistakes before they can happen. Because of your experience, you can see something's coming up. If they do make an error and you know what the solution is, well, then the next time the situation comes up, like turn to the right, and you tell them, give them the instruction, the improvement instruction ahead of time so that they can be successful. And when they do a successful maneuver, then compliment it on it or comment on it so that it reinforces the muscle memory that they're trying to work on to make their turns correctly. So it all comes together like that, and it all comes from the attitude of the instructor being there to make them a good driver, not have them not wreck the car, have them not kill somebody, but to actually be a good driver.
Audible.
Yeah. Skill and knowledge.
If you're anywhere near North Alabama and you're looking for some driving lessons, it's Red Mountain Driving Academy, based in Birmingham, Alabama, founded by Kenneth Lindquist. If you're anywhere else in the U.S. or even around the world, even if you drive on the other side of the road, his books are excellent resources for helping young people learn to drive. That's How to Teach Driving, Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, Instructor's Edition, and Parent's Edition. So, Kenneth, the way people can find you other than Red Mountain Driving Academy is you've got a website. What's the website?
It's howtoteachdriving.com.
All right.
That's all run together now, no spaces.
Yep. And that's got all kinds of resources on it, a way to contact Kenneth, post questions, share your stories, whatever. And you also have a blog that's embedded on the home page of that, too, and you'll be posting articles about driving and helping people learn how to do this well. So howtoteachdriving.com, and our guest today has been Kenneth Lindquist. Really appreciate you stopping by, Kenneth.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So, next week, we're going to have Wide Track, the Tippins, Ron and Zach, father and son, the band Wide Track. They've got some new music out, and they're going to be coming by to share some of that music with us and maybe sip a little eggnog and try to get into the holiday spirit. And then what happens after that, Dean?
After that, we are going to, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to do an encore presentation of Mark Herndon and Leah Seawright in celebration of Mark Herndon's induction into the South Carolina Music Hall of Fame and his Lifetime Achievement Award. That's on the 28th.
And then January 4th, we're going to have B.A. Johnson, author of the Sassy series. She's also author of a puzzle book and some other things that we're working on publishing as well. But right now, the Sassy books are hot, and everybody out there needs to learn about it. That's B.A. Johnson, January 4th.
And after that, we've got C.J. Peterson. She's an author, and sounds like this is going to be a lot of fun having her on the show, so tune in for that. And after that?
After that, we're going to have director and author George Dismukes. That's going to be, late January, sometime like that. So we're looking forward to meeting George. I've never actually talked to George before. I've been seeing him around for years, but that should be a fun show as well.
Yeah, he's actually following B.A. Johnson. He's on the 11th of January. So, yeah, cool.
Hey, great. All right, thanks again, Kenneth, for stopping by. The books are How to Teach Driving, Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, Parents Edition, and Instructors Edition. We've got a video trailer over on YouTube. Go check that out. Check out his website, howtoteachdriving.com. Check out his blog, howtoteachdriving.wordpress.com. And if you're in Alabama and you're looking for lessons, you can't do any better than Red Mountain Driving Academy. Thanks again for stopping by, Kenneth.
Thanks, Kenneth.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody who participated, and we'll see everybody next week.
Yeah, and thank you to Robert Willicroft and Joe Mayer for being our Twitter people tonight. We'll talk to everybody later.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.